Gano Segoli on E, and welcome back to Compelling Conversations on CKRZ 100.3 FM, the voice of the Grand. Joining me in the studio, I have the station manager or executive director of CKRZ, Amos Key. He's also a newly elected council member as well.
Yeah.
And it's a pleasure to have him in the studio with me. A rare opportunity, I guess, in some ways,
yes,
to sit down with your station manager and a newly elected councillor to talk about someone that we lost very recently in the community, but who leaves a huge legacy, and that is Mr. Tom Hill. He passed away, of course, on November 11th.
Yes.
And I just, of course, completed a bit of an interview with Rick Hill. Now, why I mention that is because Rick said as he was exiting the studio, "Oh, Amos has got some great stories about Tom." And Amos said, yeah, to me, "Have you got some questions for me?" That's the first question. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I want to share all the stories. Anyway, yes. Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, add to the conversation about the loss of Mr. Tom Vernon Hill, who was a longtime director of the museum at the Woodland Cultural Center in Brantford, at the formerly the Mohawk Indian Residential School, the Mohawk Institute. I got to know Tom working there. He had just come back from Ottawa. I think he had just done his stint with what was formerly the Department of Canadian Heritage. I think he was there, and he came to work with us at the Woodland Cultural Center. And it was a lot of his work, probably in the early 70s, when he got involved with the Woodland Cultural Center. And it was when the Mohawk Institute closed its doors in 1970, 72, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he did the paper, the position paper of where Six Nations could take that property, because all of that property reverted back to Six Nations,
right,
as a residential school.
Yeah.
And I recall he did a position paper of trying to encourage, I guess, the Woodland Cultural Center to become a cultural center, the Six Nations Council, I should say. And it was part of the movement by the Secretary of State, used to call it, before the Department of Canadian Heritage. That's how far I can remember back. It was called the Secretary of State. That's what the name of the department, federal department. And I think Tom just had done a stint with them, if I recall. And this probably will come out in his book if he ever if he did a memoir. And we're hoping he did. Anyway, so he did a position paper, and it was to a group called the Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians, AIAI, and Six Nations was a member of that. And when, I think it all came out at the time of closing the residential schools, and the white paper of 1969, and then now the National Indian Brotherhood coming out with their paper, Indian Control of Indian Education. That was the sort of philosophy that the National Indian Brotherhood came up with, to be on the opposite pole of the white paper of 1969 from the Liberal government then. And so they were closing the residential schools, right? So Tom prepared this document for the Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians to consider like organizing or creating the inception of a cultural center. And Six Nations was part of the association at that time. So they, of course, because it was their land, it was being reverted back from the residential school, the Anglican Church, diocese. So Six Nations got the property back. And then Tom did this paper, position paper, on creating the cultural center. He would eventually come to the cultural center as his first museum director, right? I think maybe not in that title, yeah, but before that, there was work by Jim Skye, the late Jim Skye, and the late Jacob Thomas. He was a Hoyantne Nantahu. He was a chief here, a Confederacy chief. And they were the first sort of curators. And then Tom became the director of the museum after he succeeded them. And then Jake Thomas created the Learning Center, the Mohawk Learning Center. So that was the history that I remembered. And Tom arrived, and he had such a network across Canada with Indigenous artists, visual artists, and he was able to put from his work from the National Gallery, he was able to bring all of that experience, expertise, to the Woodland Cultural Center to create this, you know, this gem of a gallery for Canada, for Indigenous artists, visual artists. And he worked very hard at that. And then also, he was not only the director of the gallery, the visual gallery, but also the museum as a whole. So he had kind of had two hats, the director of the gallery and then also the curator of the Mohawk Institute Museum, which was called the Woodland Cultural Center. So he had a lot of history to bring to us, expertise. And of course, he had a staff, and there are a lot of them who worked under him. I remember Sadie Buck was one of his staff, Judy Harris, longtime associate, Darlene Hill. There were a lot of them that worked with him through the museum. And of course, I worked in the languages area at the Woodland Cultural Center. I came there in 1984. July 1984, and he was already established. He was starting to establish himself there. And I know, and I don't know what year they've been looking at, but anyway, he established the an annual showcase of Indigenous artists across Canada, and he used to call it Indian art, because that's what we're called, Indians. And it became Native art and Aboriginal art, and then now Indigenous arts, right? So he has a, you know, probably 3 or 4 decades of doing that kind of work in raising the profile of Indigenous artists, visual artists across Canada. Plus, he was also an advocate for music. So he would have showcases with musicians, local musicians. He curated that right into the museum's annual offerings, you know, events. So he was really I would say a titan of Indigenous arts in this country, right? And I think he's passing. He was retired, so he had a legacy, of course. That's his legacy for all of Canada. And I think when I looked at all the condolences in the last couple of days attached to his obituary, was you can see the warm hearts that recognize his work. And being that leader in this country, and I call him a titan of Indigenous arts. But anyway, he, I learned so much from him. I think most of it was patience. He had a, that was one of his qualities. He was really patient, and he wouldn't say, "Well, we'll get there," right? So he had a great attribute of being patient, and whether it was for funding or whether it's trying to encourage mainstream Canada to acknowledge and accept Indigenous arts as, you know, one of the, I guess, one of the pillars of this country. Mm. You know, he was able to influence that, and he surely did. And I know he did a lot of work with the Royal Ontario Museum as well as being at the Woodland. And also, there was a great gallery out west, too. I can't remember the name right now, but they did a great show as well together. So Tom was guest curating across the country at the same time as Woodland. Continued that, his curatorial work, and it was phenomenal, a phenomenal career, I think. And it was, and we're the recipients of that history. Now Woodlands can continue on in his legacy to create this annual art exhibition that showcases emerging, seasoned, I guess, and then senior artists, visual artists across Canada. So, and what I always liked about Tom was he tried when he could have the when he had the funding to create a catalog in which he would write he would have a guest curator sometimes, but he always managed to influence the essay that went with that catalog. So it was a snapshot of what his vision was at that point when presenting that artwork. So I think a lot of those catalogs are still used to this day because he had such an eloquent art, eloquent and essay in each one of those so that young artists coming behind him or curators can read and talk about and see how he was moving the artist's barometer, you know, across this country. So he was a great writer of the essay for that show. And sometimes he got some guest curators, as I said, to come in, and they would jointly do the essay. And I liked the way he did that. That was fantastic. So if you ever have a chance to look at some of the old catalogs of the Indian art and what became Aboriginal art, for Woodland, I think those are great. I guess gives you, as I said, gives you a snapshot of his vision for art in this country. So I think a lot of artists actually quote some of that, his work, in their essays as well. And students do as well, visual arts. I know of some students that came to Woodlands just to try and talk to and have a meeting with Tom. And that was always nice too. But yes, he had a great sense of humor. I know, and he has a lot of stories. I cited one last week at his wake, and the Old Moshe Singers were able to go and honor him with a set of songs. We honored him with this last set of Escania Gainase women's dance songs that he sang with us last year. And so we honored that evening, that whole set. But I said he was such a comical person. In the 1980s, and I think it was 1983, 84, I was on band council at the time as well. Anyway, they asked him to organize some of the particulars for the royal visit that year, 1984. And so he did. And every year, and they have, of course, when a royal visit happens, there's an army of people that get involved setting it all up, you know. And so he had to host, they send from Buckingham Palace, of course, these people that have to come and, of course, view everything. And they stop short of bringing the dogs in, but they actually come and look at the site and where the royal visit's going to be, and the Honorable Queen Elizabeth, right? So the royal family. So anyway, and I forget what there's actually a name for this position of these people that do this front and learning of where the site's going to be. Anyway, he came very British, Tom said. And he came and he met with Tom and a committee that was assigned from our community to meet with them. And they met at the Mohawk Chapel, of course. That's where she's going to visit, right? The Royal Chapel, Queen Elizabeth II. So, and then he met with them because Tom's the leader of the organization from our point of view and our position Six Nations of Grand River. And he said this guy was so prim and proper, of course, a British, highbrow British, and he's meeting with this team, and he had to go to the bathroom. And if you know Tom, he can really embellish. Anyway, Tom said he went to the bathroom, and he didn't realize that when he closed the door that it was like an echo chamber. And the gentleman had to pass wind, of course. And then, and he said you could just hear it ricochet across the walls, around the walls, and the sound as well echoed. Anyway, and Tom said he came back up into the meeting, because it wasn't a basement bathroom. He came back up, and they were all trying not to laugh, and they were all being prim and proper. Anyway, Tom, again, met with us in the afternoon. He said, we met this British. And he couldn't wait to tell the story, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, we are all laughing. And that's the kind of stories Tom had. He had all these, and he had a real nice knack of embellishing, of course, and exaggerating.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You know? And it probably wasn't quite that. But anyway, he made us all laugh and feel comfortable with his work. So anyway, he had lots of stories like that. And I know he, one of his favorite artists was Ernestine Anderson. She was a jazz singer from the United States. And I know one time I went to, he kept talking about, you should put some of her music on your Blues Hours show, Amos, because we used to do the Blues Hours. And I said, okay. And I looked her up, and at that time, we didn't have the social media we have now, but I looked her up in a library and just trying to do my own study of who she was. I went to record stores, of course, and found some CDs. So I brought a couple. So then I thought, well, I'm going to go and hear her sing live. And she was coming to the Toronto Jazz Festival. So I thought, I'll sneak up there and go and see her. And lo and behold, when I got there, Tom's waving at me. I was trying to sneak in and see this lady. But anyway, Tom in the waving. So I thought it was fun too. I mean, he had those kinds of stories and really encouraged my expansion of music exposed and vocalist. Right. And I remember way back when Barbra Streisand had her last tour in Canada. I don't know when that would have been, what decade that would have been. But anyway, we snuck off. And I said, won't Roberta be angry at us going to see Barbra? And he says, she's on the other side of the country. She won't even know we went. So that's what some of the stories, too. Like, so we bought tickets. In those days, you had to actually go to the record store to buy the tickets. Yeah, and you had to actually use cash or a credit card. So that's what we did. We didn't sit together because we waited the day of to the day of. So he sat closer to the stage and I sat in the back. But it was fun. I mean, he was very much involved with music. And that's why, and you know, that he was really supportive of the Old Marsh Singers. Mm. And he joined us and then he was with us for probably a good decade too. So, and he got his chops going with us. And we used to call him the harmonizer because he loved to harmonize to Escagne, Gainasse, when we sang the old style songs, the old songs. And he found the moment to where he could use his voice to harmonize with that music. And we just loved that. So we called him the harmonizer for the Old Marsh Singers. And he was trying to teach us how to be harmonizers as well, two-part and three-part. Mm-hmm. But he was good at it, and he loved it. We always remember him for that as well, even on the night of his that we honored him with our songs. We acknowledged him as being the harmonizer. So those are the stories I have about Tom. I just know he was a great essayist and great singer. He loved the arts. He loved supporting Indigenous arts. And then also he was an actor. I think we all know Baby Blues, I think he was in one maybe. Anyway, I know he was in a play. We all went to see him in some of those plays in Toronto. We went and supported him. And he loved that as well. I know he was he encouraged Santi Smith, with her dance company. Mm-hmm. So I know he was on her board. And so he really delved into a lot of that. And he was involved with the Banff Center. Of course, I knew that too, because he used to fly over there and help them out with the Indigenous Arts Program over there. He was called upon to be a great lecturer as well. You know, about the arts and his history with it and his relationship to the visual arts in this country. So, as I said, I have no qualms in calling him a titan of Indigenous arts. And that'll be his legacy for all of us from this day forward. Yeah.
When you were speaking about the essayist and the way he would document things for people to come after and look at, it made me think of it sounds like Tom had a sense of not only the present and the past, but also how this, too, would become history at some point. That he was documenting that so that other people could use that at some point.
And students of art, you know, visual arts, probably students at OCAD probably quote him, Ontario College of Art. Mm. But he was a guest lecturer for a lot of those institutions as well. So I know he worked with the Glenhurst, Selwell, and Brantford, and advised with them as well. So he had a great, and McMichael as well.
Oh yeah,
I know some of his work and some of he mounted some shows with Mike McMichael in Toronto. And Royal Ontario Museum, I think his biggest show that I remember was the Dr. O.
Right.
Andre, I can't remember his name. Anyway, that was his Tom did that big show with the Royal Ontario Museum. I think it took a lot out of him because he was meticulous,
right,
in detail, right?
Right.
And I think that's something else I learned from him. You wouldn't think about my office being meticulous, but the fact your work has to be meticulous.
Right.
That's what I learned from Tom. And to rethink, you know, he would say. And so he was really, for detail, he was really, and that showed in that Dr. O show. Like, I know when they mounted at the Royal Ontario Museum, they were, I mean, one of these details was Dr. O, he wanted the actual, I guess they had created an outfit, a piece of regalia for him, and it now resides in the Los Angeles Museum, one of the museums there of the Dr. O show. And the gentleman's name was Dr. Martin, you know, and I can't remember his first name. But anyway, that was the show. And he became the head of the Foresters in the insurance. Mm. So he became the head of that corporation, Dr. O. And that's where he got his, you know, notoriety, or, in a good way. Mm. No, he's, and, but I remember he didn't just want a replica of it. They could have sent a seamstress down there, did the measuring and create a replica of it. He wanted the actual outfit, regalia, right? So his attention to detail was he flew somebody there to actually carry it back on a plane.
Right.
And they had to buy a seat
for it.
For this, because it was such a valuable piece of artifact, that's the only way they would release it, if someone personally came to pick it up and carry it by hand to Canada. And but that's the kind of detail that he wanted, not just a replica, but we actually had the regalia that Dr. Martin would have wore. So that was pretty good. And I learned so much even about him, Dr. Martin, from his work. Like, I would never have known that he was a hero, basically, for the Mohawk, because of his perseverance himself, being, you know, a representative of the Foresters and insurance, to the point where Dr. O was the only person to lie in state at Massey Hall.
Wow.
That's how much of a stature he had in Toronto. And I know they had, even in detail, they collected photographs of the era, of that time. And that's why I knew that he was able to lie in state at Massey Hall, one of the only people in the world, I guess, or Toronto anyway, in Ontario, to lie in state at Massey Hall. And it was almost, it looked like the streets were like a state funeral.
Wow.
He was such an acknowledged person, right? A Mohawk from Six Nations and Tainanega. Anyway, I learned so much about that, even that. I think that even, it teaches you so much that there were so many leaders like Tom, you know, and I think maybe that's what attracted Tom to this show, to do Moda's show about Dr. O, Dr. Martin.
Right.
And so that was, Tom leaves a legacy for all of us to consider and to be a better person, I think, you know, and again, to have patience and pay attention to detail. You know, that's what I learned from him. So thanks, Tom. And I'll always remember you for that. Onigiwa. I just wanted to add one more, one more item to this. Among the Longhouse people, Gunosiskeho, no Nantuhun, Bunagrene, Yeyin Wenzage, the Longhouse people who are at Six Nations here, we have a phrase that we use in when we when someone passes, Nina, Kwajiat Dogen, our families. We like to say that the person that passed away in our family, onane a honky handens. So the moment he passed away, that came to my mind because I love that's a beautiful phrase. And it, what it translates basically is he is going to lead us and he's going back home. The relevance of that is that we believe that when we pass away, we all go back home to where the Creator lives. And I think that's always so beautiful when I hear that. As I mentioned at the singing of our songs with him that night, that we could say, that he passed, he's resting. But when you use this higher phrase, honky hand, as he's gone ahead of us, it makes it so much, it just brings beauty to it, you know? And it's really an honorable phrase that we use in our language to acknowledge that person. For our families, it brings us comfort, you know. And that night, you know, I also said, we'll raise our spirit by raising the songs, implying that we're raising it to the Creator and to Tom on that night. So I was really happy. I was able to share that with the family that night, because it really helped. I think it helps all of us to put, you know, to bring back his memory and to be with him. Mm. That, you know, because he was at home at that point. Yeah. With us. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Now to Amos Key for coming into Compelling Conversations and sharing his memories of Tom Hill with us right here on CKRZ. It's been our pleasure to bring this three-part series honoring Tom Vernon Hill, who passed away on November 11th of 2023. We will miss him dearly. I'm your host, David Moses. You've been listening to Compelling Conversations. Stay tuned for more right here on CKRZ 100.3 FM, the voice of the Grand. Until next time, Ona and Bama Pee.